Okay, I first want to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's the first time for me to come to the beautiful country, the beautiful campus. So, my talk is about the continuous averaging proof of the Nehru-Schiff theorem. So let's first recall what is the Nehru-Schiff theorem. Suppose we have a Hamiltonian like this, the integrable part plus perturbation. The condition we impose on the Hamiltonian, the unperturbed part is supposed it's quasi-convex. In fact, this condition is slightly stronger. We have some weaker condition, but now we consider this one. The form of the theorem is over exponentially long time, we have this kind of control of deviation of the action. Let me first write it down. Actually, a lot of efforts has been devoted to find the best constant A. This B and this A. Now there is we have the following results. First, it's proved by Loschak and Neustadt, and simultaneously using different method, A and B was pushed to 1/2n. It's quite a beautiful result. And recently it's improved. Actually, it's not easy to see its improvement, but it is improved by Abed and Markov to this number. And now my purpose is, my original motivation of studying this theorem is to use this theorem to some concrete systems. So in order to do this, I need to have good estimates to all these constants. And we know A and B. And now our problem is to know what is the C1 and what is the C2. Actually, it's easy to see because the C2 appears in the exponent. This C2 is more important than the C1. So I want to estimate the C2. And in order to estimate the C2, one must fix some this constant, A and B. So the number that I choose is just the result of A and B, their 1/2n. So in this case, it's much easier to analyze. Now the result I obtain is like this. Actually, in this result, I need to say rho 1. We have angular variables. So in this case, there is a width of an elasticity for this angle, and rho 1 is slightly smaller than this rho because we couldn't achieve that number, just form that rho to decrease a little bit. And these numbers are mainly from the geometric part. It's quite standard. There's if you can improve the geometric part, this will also be improved. And these are just some ugly estimate. It's not interesting. Any question? Rho 1 is we define rho. Rho is the width of elasticity of the angular variable. This angular variable. We have width of elasticity for it. Then from this width of elasticity, we just subtract a little bit. You get rho 1. Okay. So in today's talk, I first explain the idea of the Nehru-Schiff theorem. Then I explain the idea of the Tretiakov's continuous averaging. Later, I will show how to do the proof. So for the Nehru-Schiff theorem, it mainly consists of the analytic part and the geometric part. And this is just a local study. After the local study, we need to paste all the open balls. So we use some a number theoretical theorem, just like the it's an analog to the definite approximation in KAM. Now we first mention an important theorem of Neustadt. So basically, it's for the single frequency averaging. In this kind of system, it's not necessary for it to be Hamiltonian. Suppose we have angular variable and other variables. Suppose we have only one fast angle. So n is 1. Sorry for this. I mean, this angle has only one dimension. In this case, we are able to kill this angular dependence to exponentially small. Okay? And this constant C is determined by, it's calculated by Cherchev. It's just the width of inelasticity of theta. So with this theorem, now let's have a look at our system. For this system, let me first split it into the following form. The first two terms are just splitting of this unperturbed part. This we first find a rational frequency. If a frequency is rational, that means it corresponds to a periodic orbit. So in this case, we linearize the unperturbed part. We have the linearized part and then all the nonlinear part. Then for this perturbation, we do averaging along this periodic orbit. So basically, if we do the Fourier expansion of this perturbation, what we have is the h-bar part, the h-bar is all the Fourier terms with k, inner product with this omega star is zero. It's called a resonant. And naturally, we have this formula. We will use this later. And all the remaining terms goes into this h tilde. Now just to consider an example. Suppose our frequency is like this. Actually, any rational frequency can be transformed to this form after a unimodular integer transformation. In this case, the h bar term is just all the Fourier coefficient, all the Fourier terms with k1 is zero. That means it contains no theta 1. And for this h tilde term, it's all the terms which contains theta 1. So it's like this. In this case, we see only the theta 1 is a fast angle. For all the other angles, they are just slow. It's almost no frequency. That means we are able to use Neustadt's theorem. So we get some exponential thing. So it's very natural. It's very very well-known fact from the averaging theory that if we are able to kill this h tilde term, that means the theta 1 dependence to exponentially small, we naturally get this kind of first integral, almost first integral, in this sense. So if we differentiate it according to the Hamiltonian equation, so we get this term. And then just because this formula, this term should disappear. So I only have this tilde term. And we know that each tilde term is exponentially small. That means over exponentially long time, we still have this approximately, this is the first integral. So if we have this, now we have the energy is the first integral. This one is almost first integral. So this energy surface will correspond to a hyperplane. And then this is the convex energy surface. So if we consider the intersection, the motion will be confined in the intersection. And this is the way that we prove the Nekrashev theorem. So over exponential long time, it's confined. And now our goal is very clear. We want to kill this term to exponentially small. And using the continuous averaging, later we will see, the best thing that we can do is to kill this term to this number. And here R is the working region because we are only doing this locally. So this is our goal. So this is how to go from the local to global. It's a theorem called the simultaneous definite approximation. It's quite a beautiful theorem. It's kind of due to the usual definite approximation. Using this theorem, we are able to cover the space and then to prove a global theorem. So actually, this number can give a very strong restriction to this exponent a and b. Now let's come to the continuous averaging. So the first thing is we have a definition of the lead derivative. It's nothing special. But the second equation is non-trivial. It's quite a confusing part and first glance. We just replace the lead derivative by a partial derivative. So the first equation means the variables, maybe I theta, they are evolving. And the second equation means the Hamiltonian is changing. And there in classical mechanics, there's something called infinitesimal canonical transformation. If the canonical transformation is small enough, we can treat this as a Hamiltonian flow. So that means here we just consider this f as a generating function. We use this f to do the canonical transformation. And here, the jump from the first equation to the second equation is quite non-trivial. Actually, in physics, it's quite clear, because in physics, in quantum physics, there is a Schrodinger's picture. It means the wave function is evolving. On the other hand, it's equivalent to the Heisenberg's picture. That means the operator is evolving. So this looks like the Schrodinger's picture. This looks like the Heisenberg's picture. We can give a rigorous proof for this. So let's just now admit this one. The next step, this is the second point of this the continuous averaging. Here we call this Hilbert transform. But actually, when n is 1, dimension is 1, it's Hilbert transform. So suppose we have the Fourier expansion for this perturbation. Then what kind of f to choose? That means what kind of generating function to choose to do the canonical transformation? It's like this. For each of the term, we multiply such a factor. If this inner product is positive, if we put a positive sign here, plus 1. If this inner product is negative, we put a minus sign. And if it's 0, then we forget all these terms. So we don't, here, don't forget about this I. We don't worry this becomes a complex function if this one is real. Actually, let's just look at this this example. This is positive, we put positive here. This is negative, we put negative here. So we go from sine to cosine. It's a Hilbert transform. Let's look at this picture. Suppose this is my omega star, and this I should write h bar. This contains all the keys which is perpendicular to this omega. And for all the terms which has a positive inner product with omega, we put a plus. And for all the terms with negative inner product with omega, we put a minus, minus. So we have, actually this h1, we can write it as h bar plus h plus plus h minus. And f is I, h plus minus I, h minus. It's like this. Then I need to explain why we have the Hilbert transformation here. To do this, we just recall what we do in the usual iterative Lie method. We start from this Hamiltonian. We do this kind of Lie transformation. It's quite usual in the KM iteration. So expand it, we get, naturally we have this kind of cohomological equation. And then to solve this cohomological equation, we do the Fourier expansion. Now it turns out this equation is not generally, it cannot be solved. We can only solve this equation. We subtract the zero free term, and then do the Fourier expansion, compare the coefficients. So what we have here is the k Fourier coefficient of this H1 plus, this is just a term coming from the Poisson bracket, is this one. And k cannot be zero. So we divide both sides by I k omega, we get this term. So just look at this form. If k inner product with omega is positive, then this term, the f, will naturally carry a positive sign. If this is negative, it will naturally carry a negative sign. So this is the idea, the intuition of the, I mean, the origin of the Hilbert transform. And this positive and minus sign captures the essential points of the averaging method. Actually, you can also choose this one to replace the Hilbert transform. Now, we get this idea. We use it to our system. This is just a trivial thing. Then we plug in this H. H we have expanded into four terms. Then we write it in this way. And the next step is just some calculation. Don't worry. Oh, here, cos means the Hilbert transform, just this operation. Let's go to the next page. It's not useful here. Just after some calculation, we get this. And the point is, actually, this h-bar term, I mean, to extract all the terms which lies in the h-bar. And this means, because after combination, it becomes completely messy. So we extract all the terms from plus and from minus. We don't worry about this plus, this bar and tilde today. Actually, this is the main difficulty for proving the theorem. But today, in order to explain the idea, let's forget all these terms containing epsilon, just remaining the two terms. We get this is trivial, nothing to do. And for this term, we have this form. Notice, there is a minus sign here. There's no minus sign here, just because the definition of the Hilbert transform. So this negative sign will make a big difference. Now let's look at what we, let's first just digress a little bit. Suppose we have a rational vector, and then it's natural that this is the frequency. Then the period will be determined in this way. We calculate the GCD, the greatest common divisor of this vector, and then divide it by this Q. So suppose this GCD is 1, then we are happy, nothing to do. And there is an important point. It's not quite difficult. It's quite easy. Because omega is just a rational vector, k is integer vector. Suppose their inner product is not 0, then it's bounded below. And generally, we have this lower bound, just because this. So keep this formula in mind. Yes, let me write it. So let's recall the formulas. We first deal with this term. Suppose this inner product is positive, that means we study H plus, and we first consider only the first term. So just first, now we do the Fourier expansion. The kth Fourier exponent looks like this, and then this is just Fourier expansion. The non-trivial point is let's look at here is I, and after taking this derivative, there is another I. We get this minus sign. We have assumed that the inner product is positive, so we have a minus absolute value, something, and cancel all these e to the power ik theta. We get this exponential decay of the Fourier coefficient. And then similarly for this H minus. Notice there is a minus sign. There's no minus sign here. And if we have a minus sign, after taking derivative, we get ii, we get 2 minus. And moreover, we have 1 minus sign here. Again, it's like this. So for the h minus term, the Fourier coefficient will also decay like this. This is just this number. And now we come to the 2 terms. For the 2 terms, we get a linear PDE, first order linear PDE. So we use characteristic method to solve this. So we suppose the characteristic looks like this. Then solving this equation, we get imaginary flow. This flow is imaginary, and it appears only in the angular variable. So using this characteristic method, along these characteristics, we get this equation. Now let's see what will happen to the kth Fourier term. So generally, hk to the power e to the power ik theta. This term is because we assume the perturbation is analytic. It's naturally to decay like this. So this rho is with an analyticity for the angular variable. And then because this theta, we have shown that it has imaginary flow. So we have this term. And here there is I, so there is minus sign here. And this term becomes real. That means this term is no longer modulus 1. And then this is our new angle. So now we get this term. Generally speaking, we have no control over the G prime. What we can do is just to give a pessimistic estimate. We need to control the kth Fourier term should be strictly less than 1. Otherwise, the Fourier expansion does not converge. So we have this kind of control. Generally speaking, I should mention this G is all the nonlinear terms. So it's roughly m plus I square. And if we take a derivative, it's just m plus I. And we say I is confined. This is our working region. So we have just plug all this information. We get this data. That means we couldn't run our flow for infinite long time. We must stop at some point. So that means using this formula, delta looks like this. And on the other hand, we have this kind of exponential decay. Just plug this in. We get this estimate. Okay. And okay, thank you. So this is the result I have mentioned. The non-resonant part, we can kill it to this power. Yeah, thank you.